Chapter 13. Faroon Hall was a defensible place to run to, but that's why Rondol wanted to lead the Ghavani party away from it. The tower was secure, but without hope of reinforcement, a prolonged siege would inevitably fall in the goblins' favour. But Faroon Hall wasn't the only manor in the area. He and Fursar galloped a few miles down the road to the ruined Ketrel Manor. As it was already ruined, he didn't mind messing it up a bit more. That made it the perfect place to set an ambush for the goblins. He studied the grounds for almost 5 minutes before he did anything, but when he did move, he moved quickly. He sketched out what he wanted done to the ranger and then set to work on his spellcraft. He used the power of the Irionite liberally, and utilized spells he'd learned in war college and thought he'd never have the chance to try. Mindful of the foe's new mounts, he cast some spells aimed specifically at canines and set them in sigils across the yard of the manor. He entrapped doors and windows and enchanted various items around the yard as quickly as he could. Then he prepared a potent suite of offensive spells for himself, before finally reclining behind a bale of cotton with the tired ranger and calling Tyndall again. "How goes the pursuit?" he asked, when contact was finally established. "They seem to be doing splendidly," growled Tyndall. "We've lost two of our insurgents, damn them. We just made that turn you told us to make. Now what?" Rondol explained the plan to him, including a few contingencies. He tried to keep it as short as possible. "You think this will work?" "We can at least thin them down a bit," reasoned Rondol. "Being chased by 50 goblins seems a lot more manageable than being chased by 100. "More like 80 now," Tyndall corrected. "We've been busy." "Even better. Just let me know when you're ready." It only took an hour before the sound of hoofbeats rumbled through the ground, followed by the high peal of barking dogs. But the howls, whines, and barks did not sound like those of dogs Rondol was used to, like the Westwoodmen's hounds that his master was so fond of. These canines were different, somehow, and not in a friendly, puppy sort of way.
"Ron," Tyndall said, mind to mind, "I hope you're ready. We're ready to drop. If we don't rest the horses soon."
"I know. Relax. Just stick to the plan. Remember to go around anything marked with a tuft of cotton. Those are the bad spells. Just ride into the yard. Circle around the manor house and return to the front of the yard. I'll be there waiting, and hopefully we can settle this then."
"Here we come,"
Tyndall shouted in his mind, just as the first of 5 horsemen thundered through the gate. The horses were visibly lathered, flecks of foam on their lips. Their riders were not much better. 2 carried wounds from the pursuit, the dart still protruding from their bodies.
"Care to announce us?"
Tyndall cracked, mind to mind.
"It would be my pleasure,"
Rondol agreed, and activated the first of his spells as soon as the first fell hound appeared, a screaming goblin clinging to its back. The Gervant bore a long, thin blade he waved clumsily as his mount sped through the gate. Rondol grinned to himself and whispered the mnemonic. As the horses ran around the building to the north, the first pack of goblin cavalry bounded past, and directly into the thickest field of sigils, each one marked with a small tuft of white cotton on the ground. Whenever they passed, they bore the brunt of his spell, which usually threw down rider or hound or both. He'd used high-profile explosives and brilliant flares, as well as spells that shredded internal organs or otherwise incapacitated the target. Fursar the ranger was gleefully shooting at those who missed the field of combat magic. His deft archery landed more often than missed. When Tyndall indicated that he was directly behind the building, Rondol activated his next spell, and the bulk of the pack that howled into the gate was caught in a sudden firestorm that appeared out of nowhere, engulfing the yard in flame and setting alight the fur of rider and mount alike. Dozens of fell hounds writhed in the dirt, and Ghavani screamed and rolled to stop the flames. Rondol didn't pause to watch the carnage he'd wrought. He had plenty of other goblins to contend with. He launched spell after spell from his nest behind the cotton bales. Each was targeted on a different section of the yard, which was already dotted with individual goblins or dogs who had blundered into his static spells. Now he unleashed the powerful assault spells he'd recently learned. The first was a pain-causing sheet of magic that did little real damage, but left its victims with about 5 minutes of uncontrolled, unbearable agony that could prove quite distracting. He followed it quickly with a second, a cone of force that blasted a dozen goblins clean off their mounts and sent their dogs spinning into disarray. The final spell was composed of 3 well-placed piles of the sharpest rocks he could find.
They concealed spells that caused them to explode when the dogs came too close, sending shrapnel shredding everything around it. Rundle liked that one. After the three quick bangs, there was as much blood as there was fur and smoke.
"We're coming around the building," Tyndall advised him. "I hope you got them ready. Go straight for the gate," Rundle ordered. "We'll be right behind you."
He drew his mage blade and encouraged the ranger to draw his sword. As soon as Tyndall and his band rode out, swords flashing, they sprinted into the chaos of the yard, slashing at everything in their way.
"What a difference a year makes," Rundle reflected, as he triggered his war magic augmentations and began plying his mage blade. At last year's battle at Cambrian Castle, he'd been terrified and unsure of himself. Now he surveyed the battlefield of Kettrell Manor with a more experienced and learned eye. He saw the majority of the foe still clumped toward the north, where they had halted pursuit after the first magical attack. Most were not paying any attention to him or his comrades. The Gavanni and dogs between him and the gate were scattered. As imposing as they appeared to be, his now well-trained eye understood the battlefield as zones of threat, each step forward changing the gradient of peril and offering him options in response. That goblin there, with his back turned, a flick of his wrist and his mage blade sliced through his arm at the elbow. It wouldn't kill him, but he wouldn't be fighting for a while, and that was sufficient. His boots trod on. The canine on his right, four steps beyond that, was turning to face him, albeit slowly, with a rider on his back. If he charged, he would intercept Rondal in his path. The war wand in his left hand blasted the goblin cavalryman and his dog with a concussive wave strong enough to snap the dog's neck and throw the goblin into the air. It was the big brother to the stunning wands they'd practiced with at Raylan Kor, and it packed a punch. Five steps beyond that, two Gavanni had dismounted, smouldering, and had drawn blades. He plunged his mage blade through the chest of one, then shifted his position to put the skewered goblin in the path of his fellow before yanking the blade free and decapitating him as he spun back around. A third was leaping toward him, a dagger in each hand and a wicked grimace on its fanged face, when an arrow blossomed in his throat. Fursar the ranger had gotten off a shot before using his bow to knock a few goblins off of their feet. He considered stopping long enough to slit their throats or otherwise finish them off, but he stopped himself. The goal, he reminded himself, was not to kill the enemy. It was to escape. He could have turned and given battle and slain a dozen or more, but that wasn't the plan, and a good commander stuck with his plan unless there was a compelling reason to change it. They made the gate in good order, leaving a trail of dead and wounded Gavanni behind them, and as the ranger ran past him, Rondal turned and magically pulled as much debris as he could into the wooden doorway before sealing it with a spellbinding. It wouldn't last long, under concentrated attack, but it should slow down their pursuers enough for them to get away. Their horses were tied off 50 feet off the main road, behind the ruins of a peasant's cot. The two of them made it to their mounts without incident and caught up with Tyndall and his men before they got to the ruined village.
"Ron, damn, it's good to see you," Tyndall said gratefully as he gulped water and walked his lathered horse. "That was great work. Are they preoccupied?
We have at least 10 minutes head start," Rundle agreed. "Plenty of time. We can obscure the crossroads and they'll not know which way we left."
"That was some impressively destructive spellcraft," Tyndall repeated admirably.
Rundle blushed. He wasn't used to getting compliments from his rival.
"Look nasty as nine hells, coming around the corner like that. How many do you think we left behind us? 50 or 60, mayhap?"
Rondal shrugged. "I was too busy to call the roll."
"Still, enough to give us problems,"
nodded Tyndall, "but not so many we can't handle." Rondal shook his head. He knew his fellow was correct, but it amazed him that between the two of them they now felt capable of dealing with 60 goblins.
"How far away is this hidey hole of yours?"
6 miles. "But they're easy miles. We can hole up there overnight. Once we're sure the Gavanni have lost interest, we can head back to Matamor without fear of being followed."
"Any wine there?" Walvin asked from behind them.
"I'd kill for a cup."
"Indeed, I think I just did."
"Enough," agreed Rondal. "The Lord of Faroon had a decent cellar, and the tower is secure. If we enchant the exterior, we can have a snug and secure evening." He took a moment to catch his breath, then continued.
"So, tell me, what got the goblins so riled up?"
"Probably what we saw," Tyndall said meaningfully. He took a parcel from his pouch and handed it over. It was a rag, a scrap of someone's tunic, wrapped around what looked like some sort of clay. Rondal touched it. It was cold and a little wet, and it had a pungent aroma. When he felt it between his fingers, it seemed to flake apart. "What is it?" he asked, as he held some up to the sunlight. He was about to smell it more carefully when Tyndall snorted. "Some sort of poop!" Rondal glared as he looked at the substance in a new light. "Were you going to let me taste it? I was curious to see if you'd try," admitted Tyndall, grinning. "So you discovered poop," Rondal said, disgusted. "This is the goblin's secret weapon?" "No, it's poop from the goblin's secret weapon," corrected Tyndall, "and there was a lot of it." "So you discovered the goblins had a lot of poop," Rondal said, annoyed. "No, I said there was a lot of this particular poop," he enunciated. Rondal sighed. Clearly, Tyndall thought that the poop was important. "I concede to your expertise on poop," he said, referring to Tyndall's former job as a stable boy. "Why is this poop important?" "Because this particular poop was 3 feet wide."
3 feet?
"That is a lot of poop. Not 3 feet long, 3 feet wide. Rondal, what kind of animal has a butthole 3 feet wide?"
"I have no idea."
"Dragon?"
"That's what I thought too," Tyndall nodded.
"But it's not dragony."
"What do you mean?"
"I'm not exactly sure," Tyndall admitted. "But as you so tactlessly pointed out, I'm kind of an expert on poop. And in my expert poop opinion, that particular poop didn't originate from a Saurian butthole," he said authoritatively.
"I hope you realize how stupid you sound," Rondal said, earning a chuckle from the men behind. He wrapped up the poop and returned it to Tyndall.
"So this was a really big non-dragon poop, from a source unknown," agreed Tyndall, "and we got too close. We saw it on the road, and first I thought it was, well, it was poop, and then I realized just how big a creature would have to be to take such a giant dump, and that got me speculating about all sorts of unlikely and increasingly unpleasant images. So I had our insurgent friends take us to the manor they're using as a base to get a closer look. Only that's when the patrol was alerted to our presence. Since then, it's been a lovely ride through a tranquil Gilmoran countryside, being chased by bloodthirsty beasts."
"You're right," Rondal admitted after some thought. "That's a significant poop.
All right. We know where they don't want us to look, so we should look there. Meanwhile, we should be where they don't know to look for us." They stopped briefly at the crossroads in the village to properly obscure the direction they headed, adding a few arcane measures that would further cloud the issue, and then proceeded to Faroon Hall. Rondal went ahead with Walvin to prepare for their arrival and alert the sentries, leaving the ranger to guide the rest of the party.
"Sir Haystack had more metal than I'd thought," Walvin admitted when they were alone. "He's actually not as dumb as he looks, and he does take an aggressive approach to warfare."
"He's not so bad," conceded Rondal, and quickly changed the subject. "But just from your perspective, this poop, is it something to worry about?"
Walvin shrugged. "I'm worried, Stryker, and I think he's right. That didn't look like dragon droppings, though I've never seen a dragon. And we found tracks, too. Big, big tracks. No animal I've seen makes tracks like that."
"Then we'll have to investigate," decided Rondal, "after we shake these Gavani off. So they have cavalry now. Not terribly effective. Not in a charge, perhaps," agreed Walvin, "but they did a fine job of screening and pursuit, let me assure you. We lost a few men along the way, and those foul dogs may not have the endurance of a horse, but with a pack of them, they don't have to. They'll never be able to stand up to proper lances. But if they ever learn to shoot from the saddle, they might be something to contend with. I could see how they would be pretty intimidating to the average Gilmoran peasant family."
"I'll report it," Rondal agreed dutifully. "Now, what is your opinion of this insurgent, this man Alwer of Maramore, the Hayward?"
"He's a Hayward?" asked Walvin, surprised. "He's a demon with a spear. Good fighter, on foot at least. He rides like a peasant. But he's as stalwart as any of them."
"Why?"
It's complicated, but I have a potential security problem." He thought a moment in silence. He reviewed the situation as objectively as possible in his head.
He hadn't spoken to Alwer himself, on purpose. He wanted the man's story, but he didn't want it just yet. He had to be certain of Arcella first, regardless of what the Hayward said. Faroon Hall looked deserted as they rode in, but there was a man concealed by the gate with an arbalest. They told him of the newcomers arriving behind them, and then took their horses to the stable before retiring to the tower. Lady Arcella was where he had bid her to go, in the topmost chamber. Her arbalest was cocked and loaded, and she was pacing back and forth nervously when Rondal mounted the stairs, after checking on the guards he'd left behind.
"You're back," she said anxiously. "What happened?"
"Goblins," he said without elaborating. "We ambushed them at Kettrell Manor. There are a score less now, and a score less of their damned dogs."
"Were you hurt?"
she asked, concerned. Rondal looked down at himself. He had splashes of goblin blood and singed fur on his surcoat, but no blade had touched him.
"No,"
he said carefully. "I am fine. But we won't be headed back to Maramore just yet."
"What?"
she asked, her eyes wide. "There are more goblins in the neighborhood," explained Rondal. "We still have some men out there. We've laid some false trails, but just to be safe, we're going to stay the night here."
"Oh,"
she said, her eyes shifting.
"I suppose that's prudent."
"So glad to get your approval," snorted Rondal.
"I just meant that it sounded like a good idea,"
she said, softening.
"So, Rondal, I hope you don't mistake my worry over our situation for animosity. I meant no disrespect."
That seemed an abrupt change of mood, Rondal observed to himself. He knew some women had the capacity to go from joy to distress and back with frightening regularity. He was not overly fond of that type of girl. But there was something more to Arcella's presentation that bothered Rondal, something disingenuous. "Milady," he began formally, "since I have come to Maramore, I have been nothing but polite, courteous, and respectful to you and your home, though I was not required to under these circumstances. We have developed a friendship of which I am quite fond. But your manner toward me has lately been unfavorable, when I do not see where I may have given you offense."
I have been hard put of late," she said, looking away guiltily. "I have lost all I know, and have no idea what the gods hold in store for me. Please, understand,"
she said, tears in her eyes.
"I am just trying to exist in a home turned hellish."
"I am giving you all the courtesy and grace due your station in this situation," Rondal pointed out. "But when the matter of Alwer arose..."
"The traitor?"
she asked suddenly.
"Of course my heart turned hard. If you had been there that day, yours would have too. The screaming, the crying, the murders in the yard. Oh, if only you'd been there, Sir Rondal, mayhap the day would have fallen differently."
Suddenly she was in his arms. "So you still wish me to put this man to the question for his crimes, and hang him if he is a collaborator?" he asked, swallowing hard. He hadn't expected the embrace.
"Take no such chances," she urged. "Slay him at once, and spare us all the burden. He is a wicked man, a liar, who gave over his own people to the goblins. Surely it is no crime to slay a foe in battle?"
"No, it is no crime," Rondal said firmly, as he pushed Arcella away. "But I would not slay a man for a crime before he has a chance to speak of it."
"Why are men so obsessed with the rules when lives are at stake?"
she snarled, looking at him angrily, suddenly.
"Is the word of a lady not sufficient?"
"To have a man brought to trial, perhaps," Rondal said sternly. "But for the gallows? Nay, not if you were a duchess."
"You don't know what danger you put your comrades in," she said accusingly. "Sir Tyndall would know how to deal with such a vile traitor. At any time, Alwer could say brave Sir Tyndall from behind, and yet you have sent no word or warning. Is it because you are jealous of him, or of my attentions and affections? Do you hate him so? So much that you wish him dead?"
The accusation caught Rondal short, for there was a time when his animosity toward his rival was so great that he wished harm to him, at some place in his mind. But now he felt proper guilt at such feelings. As tumultuous as his relationship with Tyndall had been over the years, the other boy had not been unfair to him, had not betrayed him or his secrets, had not done him any serious harm when he had had the chance. Tyndall might be an annoyance, even a rival, but he was not an enemy.
"Jealous?"
asked Rondal quietly. I think not. Yet your words are curious, my lady, and telling. We will determine the guilt of Alwer and the truth of the attack on Maramore.
Sir Tyndall might well be dead by then,
she argued shrilly. I doubt it, Rondal dismissed. He should be riding through the gate any time now. Then we will speak of this vile Heywood of yours, who apparently slew a number of his supposed confederates, while convincingly playing that he was fleeing for his life from them. He did not mention Alwer would be with Sir Tyndall. He kept back that surprise. He was wary of Arcella now.
What?
Snapped Arcella. I went out to assist Sir Tyndall and his band as they were fleeing goblin riders, explained Rondal slowly and deliberately. After our victory, he is now on his way up the manor's drive as we speak with a few of his men. They will be joining us for the evening. Sir Tyndall has had time to make Alwar's acquaintance and take the measure of the man. We will see if his assessment of his character matches yours. We will have plenty of time to discuss Alwar's guilt or innocence, among other matters. Arcella's eyes filled with tears and her shoulders shook with sobs.
You know not what danger you lead your comrade into by keeping this from him, she said softly. Alwer is a monster. He will destroy us all.
He is but one Heywood, m'lady, Rondal reminded her firmly. We faced a dragon last year. I think we can manage. But clearly you are distressed, m'lady. Pray take a moment to rest and compose yourself while I see to the men, and prepare to ward us in for the night. Then we can discuss this matter more fully. He left her there weeping, his heart aching and growing more indelicate with every step he took. Whatever misgivings he had about slaying Alwer out of hand were well placed, he knew now. When the rest of the company arrived a while later, Rondal ordered the gate closed, and he and Tyndall both warded it with as strong of a defensive suite as they could, with Tyndall adding some charms of his own he'd picked up in Inarion. They're going to keep searching for us, he predicted. They have lost too many Gavanni now, and they still have not brought us in or slain us. This will help convince them that they've already checked out this manor and found nothing.
Blue magic, nodded Rondal.
It's surprisingly useful, agreed Tyndall, if subtle, and harder to work on Gavanni minds, of course. But it does work on human minds, he affirmed. That might come in handy. We have a certain matter to discuss.
What?
Oh, the girl, Tyndall reminded himself, looking troubled. That is going to be problematic. I spoke to Alwer at length, and there are some holes in Arcella's story, and according to Alwer, he was as much a victim of the raid on Maramore as anyone else. He never collaborated.
Are you sure?
Demanded Rondal, his heart sinking.
Absolutely, assured Tyndall. He described the fight. He's not stupid, but he's not smart enough to lie convincingly about something like that.
Not if you know what to ask him.
Still, anyone can be fooled, Rondal pointed out lamely.
Oh, no. Just to be sure, while he wasn't paying attention, I cast a truth-telling on him. I could have asked him about his first tumble, and he would have told me all about it.
He didn't collaborate.
Then why in seven hells would she lie about that? Rondal asked, mystified.
There's only one person who can answer that, Tyndall pronounced. Let's get washed up and have a drink, and then we'll go see just why Lady Arcella was so anxious to put this man's neck in a noose.
Rondal asked Tyndall to request that Alwer take his meal in the stables, and gave him some instruction and explanation while he saw to the men's evening meal in the abandoned Great Hall. They would sleep in the tower, but until night fell, there was little reason not to use the more comfortable Great Hall to sup. Lady Arcella was sullen and silent throughout the meal, answering questions with one-word responses or nods of her head. She barely looked up from her food, and only long days between meals compelled her to do more than pick at the traveller's stew they'd made. When Sir Tyndall came in, Rondal watched her carefully. She looked longingly at him at first, but then her expression changed to guilt, then fear, then anxiety, then hopelessness, then desperation, then contemplation, then despair.
Ish's tits,
Rondal remarked to himself. How can one girl's head contain so many emotions in such a short time? Her eyes darted between he and Sir Tyndall several times, and Rondal could swear he could hear the mill gears of her mind grinding away at some idea. I'm going to go stroke the luck tree, Rondal said, stretching and yawning.
We can get secured when we're done eating. Everyone take a dump before we close up the tower, unless you want to smell your own chamber pot all night. He gave Arcella a crude grin. She didn't make a face, as he would have expected at his boyish behaviour. Instead, she looked away. Rondal relieved himself in the yard and then went to the stables, where Alwa was dining with the horses. "I'm sorry I deprived you of the comfort of the hall," Rondal began. "But under the circumstances..."
"This is the best hall I've supped within in weeks, my lord," the Hayward assured him, leaping to his feet. "No apologies necessary. I owe you, after how you saved us from those scrugs."
"My pleasure," Rondal said automatically. "And if you truly feel indebted to me, then do me this boon. When we retire to the tower for the evening, I want you to come speak with Sir Tyndall and me about Lady Arcella, but I bid you not to discuss the matter with anyone, before or after, save as I bid. Sir Tyndall assures me of your character and your innocence, but the accusation before me is severe enough that I feel obligated to see it spoken of openly. Can you do this for me?"
"Aye, my lord. Anything to clear my name,"
the man assured him earnestly. "I've no truck with the Scruggs, and I'll fight any man who says otherwise." There was no mistaking the sincerity of his tone. The man hated goblins. He was not a collaborator. As dusk fell, Tyndall secured the stables with additional spells to confound the olfactory senses. If the goblins had not discovered a canine's facility with tracking by smell, they were sure to do so soon, before sealing the tower from the inside for the night. "Even if they do get past the walls and the spells on the gate," he announced to the six men in the snug room at the base of the tower, "they'll spend hours running around this place trying to find the door. There's an enchantment on it that makes it always seem to be on the other side." That made them all laugh. Rondal grabbed a bottle of wine from the cellar and left Tyndall to see to ordering the men for the night. The men were to stay in the base of the tower near to the door. Rondal and Tyndall would keep watch, mostly by magic, allowing everyone to get a much-needed night's sleep. In the third-story room above, Lady Arcella was curled up under her mantle, her crossbow at hand, when Rondal came in. She started, then settled back into her makeshift bed.
"My lady, please tell me again, from the beginning, what happened on the night of the attack on Maramore."
"Why? I've told you! Humour me,"
he ordered flatly. She sighed in frustration, then began speaking in a very deliberate voice, as if she had practised it.
"We had snuck away from Sir Hagen's party, my maid and I, and gone back to Maramore to hold it in his absence. Foolish, perhaps, but, well, the manor was filled with the village folk. For a week, things were fine. A little chaotic, with the yard filled with villeins camping out, hiding from the goblins, but nothing bad. Folk went out to the village or the fields by day and came home to the safety of Maramore at night. Then one night, someone knocked on the gate and begged permission to come in. The steward let him in. Curse him. I swear, it was Alwa the Hayward. An hour later, the gate was attacked. That thing tore it right apart, and then there were goblins everywhere. My maid rushed me to the hiding place Sir Hagen had prepared, and pushed me inside just as the goblins were coming up the stairs. I can still hear her screaming," she said, her face locked in horror and regret, as tears fell down it. "And if it hadn't been for Alwa..."
"But what did Alwa do?" asked Rondal, his arms crossed. "What exactly did he do that was treacherous?"
He must have sabotaged the gate,"
Arcella insisted.
"Gotten word to his damnable confederates that
there were people barricaded inside," finished Rondal. "I doubt they needed his help for that. He didn't even let them in. If there was a troll breaking down the gate," he said accusingly.
"But he was there," she insisted tearfully. "He came in, then they attacked, and everyone got led away in chains. Everyone they didn't kill on the spot. He sabotaged the gate. He must have. He betrayed the guards.
If he had sabotaged the gate, m'lady," Rondal said quietly, "then the goblins would not have had recourse to a troll. But your gates were decidedly removed by a troll. Yet you still insist on Alwa's treachery."
"I do," she pleaded. "You must kill him."
"Thank you, m'lady," Rondal said, bowing. "Sir Tyndall, did you hear all of that?"
"Every word,"
Tyndall said, as he mounted the narrow stairs, a mage light floating ahead of him, the long ears spell.
"And so did Goodman Alwa," he continued, as the Hayward followed behind him. "So,
What do you have to say to the accusations of your treachery made by Lady Arcella, Alwer of Maramore? The peasant looked troubled as he stared at Rondal, then Tyndall, and then at the girl.
Well, my lords, as far as treachery goes, I will swear on Trigg's holy wound that I have never betrayed anyone, ever, as I am an honest man, not even if my own life was at risk. He sounded indignant and angry, but still cautious, and as far as Lady Arcella is concerned, I know not what she says, if she still breathes at all, for that girl is not Lady Arcella.
Rondal and Tyndall stared at him, mouths agape. When they both looked back at the weeping woman, she had her face buried in her hands, sobbing.
"What do you mean, Goodman?" asked Tyndall slowly.
Rondal was afraid to breathe.
"I mean that girl is not Lady Arcella. Lady Arcella is younger, has truly blonde hair, and is more shapely about the face. Favours her mother, she does. This woman here is Maid Belsey. She's Lady Arcella's lady's maid. Or at least she was."
"What?" Rondal and Tyndall asked, in shocked unison.
"Do you want to tell the tale less? Or should I?" Alwer asked, accusingly.
When she didn't answer, he shrugged and continued.
"Tale was that old Sir Hagen's older brother, Sir Hagbell, sired a bastard on a common village maiden in his youth, and then got himself killed at tournament. Sir Hagen took the child in when she were old enough to foster, as a kindness and in honour of his brother. He had his own daughter, Arcella, just a year younger, so it was a good fit. 'Tis true enough, the girl slipped back to Maramore, and it's true as well that the attack happened, even that I came late to the gate, but I had tarried in the village to avoid a patrol, not collaborate with them. When they attacked, it had nothing to do with me, that I swear. The girls ran into the manor when the attack came. We fought. By doing sack, we fought, my lords. Killed a few of them too, but there wasn't no getting around that troll. Then the evil men came and tied us up, all 20-odd of us, including Lady Arcella."
"So she was taken captive with you?" repeated Tyndall. "She didn't escape into some hiding place?"
"No," Alwer agreed slowly. "And that first night they had us, she said that her maid Belsey got to the hiding place first, that she had locked her out from inside, that she had screamed and cried for her to open it and let her in. But she did not."
His voice was filled with condemnation.
"So what happened to Lady Arcella?" asked Rondal in a hushed voice. "I know not, my lord. After that first night we were separated out, men from women, so the evil men could have some sport before they took us north. I heard them. We all heard them. They screamed all night long, poor girls. But we were tired and could do naught. We were marched out at dawn the next day, but the women were still in camp. We got rescued that day, thank doing, but none of the women folk were ever seen again."
Belsey broke down in sobs anew at this news. Tyndall thanked the peasant man. "Go on down and have a cup or two. But do not speak of this to anyone yet, Alwer. For now, she is still Lady Arcella, is that clear?"
"Aye, my lord,"
the peasant said, his eyes hard against the girl.
"For now."
When he had gone and Tyndall had shut the door behind him, Rondal took a seat on a stool near the window.
"So, do you deny anything that Alwer said?"
She would not look up or speak to them. Rondal repeated the question, but she still would not speak. Tyndall finally boomed.
"Belsey of Maramore, you now stand accused of bearing false witness in a capital crime in a time of war. Will you not speak in your own defence?"
The commanding tone brought the girl upright, almost against her will. But soon she was kneeling in front of them both, her hands clasped, tears streaming down her face.
"Do
you deny the truth of what Alwer said?" repeated Rondal.
He waited again for her to speak, and was about to accuse her again when she finally found words.
"Do you have any idea what it was like growing up here?"
she spat angrily instead.
"Do you have any idea what it was like knowing that but for a few words said in Temple, all of that, all of Maramore should have been mine? I was the older brother's daughter, she bellowed. I was the older daughter.
It all makes sense now, Randall said, almost to himself. The way you knew your way around a kitchen better than most noble girls. How your clothes, her clothes, never quite fit. How you rarely referred to Sir Hagen as father. He was always Sir Hagen.
Why waste good coin on finery for a bastard servant girl?
She asked angrily.
They put her in silks, while I was in cotton rags. When she wanted to slip away and come back to Maramore, she was trying to come back for more clothes, the stupid snot. Oh, I was the loyal little maid, doing everything she asked, everything she demanded, knowing all the time it should have been me giving the orders. You have no idea, you damned knights, knowing what it's like to grow up a bastard and a commoner.
Actually, Rundle said quietly, Tyndall and I are both. We didn't let it spoil our aspirations. What did you hope to gain from this deception, anyway? Asked Tyndall.
My birthright, she said hotly. My legacy, but mostly my life. That day when they came, I was the faster one. I was the one who thought about the refuge first. I was the faster one up the stairs. She was always a little dim, a little slow, our cellar was, but bossy. I got there first. And there was only room for one. Why should I yield my security and doom us both? Damn right I shut her out. I saw her, I heard her. Then I closed it and hid, and I'd do it again.
All of which might be forgiven, but then you misrepresented yourself. Tyndall continued relentlessly. You told yourself off as a noblewoman to our company, claiming by deceit what was not yours by birth.
I was fearful of the soldiers invading my home. She said indignantly. Would your men have been as deferent to a servant girl as they were Lady Arcella of Maramore?
She accused. Rondol pursed his lips in thought as he considered what she said. Yes, he had to admit. Her pretense to social status had indeed ensured her security at the outpost. There was no telling what would have happened if Belsey had revealed herself as a common serving girl, even around disciplined men. But what kind of man did she think Rondol was? He would not have allowed them to molest her. He had picked them on good recommendations from their commanders, and none had a reputation for such sport. While he understood her fear in a chaotic situation, he and his men had given no sign that they meant her ill. They treated her with the courtesy and respect any man who knew Ishi's laws would. Why did you persist then, when it was clear that my men and I were well behaved?
Would you have extended me the treatment that you did if I hadn't?
She demanded tearfully.
Would you have looked upon me as a peer, not as a hindrance? Would you have taken me seriously as common old Belsey, and not the noble Arcella?
Now we shall never know, Tyndall said, unprompted. His eyes were flashing angrily. Because of your lies, Maiden Belsey, you have inherited the legacy of their consequences, pretending to be a noble, pretending to own Maramore, pretending to a name not your own. All are punishable offences in Castol under civil law. All that, he said, waving it away with a hand, could be overlooked under the circumstances. But, he continued, his voice as sharp as a mage blade, when you try to murder a good man, an innocent man, by bearing false witness, that, Maiden Belsey, is too much for an honourable man to ignore.
I had no choice,
she insisted. Her voice a pitiful wail.
If he told you what really happened that night, if he told you who I really was, I would have lost my only chance at Maramore.
Maramore is lost, Rondal said, his voice aching as he spoke. I told you that when I arrived. Maramore is an abandoned estate behind enemy lines in a war zone. It has temporary utility as a military outpost, but until this land is recovered, it is lost.
What would you have done had my men moved on the day after we arrived? Begged to go with you, she admitted, but as the gods delivered to me a chance, I took it. Would you have done otherwise in my place?
Yes, both boys said in unison. Tyndall continued, We have done less than honourable deeds in our lives, Maiden Belsey, he said, his contempt for her deeds obvious, but we have never tried to murder in defence of our dishonour.
You tried not merely to murder Alwa, but tried to do so by proxy, implicating other men in your crime, through a sworn soldier of the king.
under the banner of war. Each fact was spoken like an indictment. According to the laws of Duin, such actions are tantamount to looting and treason, Rundell agreed, slowly. Each are capital offences, subject to battlefield justice, Tyndall pronounced. What say you in defence of your actions? Her eyes grew wide, and her face turned white. Her tears did not cease, but she stopped making noise. For some reason, Rundell found that even harder to bear.
I beg you, Sir Tyndall, be merciful, she said finally,
breaking the awful silence.
I knew not what I was doing. I was merely trying to survive.
She looked around desperately, seeking some means of escape. Rundell could see it in her eyes, like a trapped animal, watching frantically as its doom closed in. Suddenly, her eyes alighted on him, and to his shock, so did her ire.
If you seek a traitor, look to Sir Rundell, my lord, regardless of his guilt or innocence. When I told him of the danger Alwer presented to you, he was reluctant to inform you, reluctant enough that he sent out no messenger. I checked. Every day, I checked. He had hopes that Alwer would be the assassin that would put an end to you. Can you not see how jealous he is of you?
She asked, as if it was the most apparent thing in the world. Now why would Sir Rundell wish ill of me? Demanded Tyndall, scornfully.
Is it not obvious? She snorted. He has ambition of taking your position once you are dead, and no doubt, my affections. Trust me, my lord, I have heard him say as much, though he speaks subtly. Only once you were gone he—
Would have twice as much work to do, laughed Tyndall derisively. Despite how distraught he felt over Arcella's, Belsie's, deception, the thought of being solely responsible for all that Master Min had in store for them was indeed terrifying. At least with Tyndall around, he did not have to bear it alone. On that basis alone, he would have fought through a legion of goblins to rescue Tyndall right then, despite whatever ill feelings might still stand between them. He looked at Belsie with a new light. Anyone who might mistake his feelings toward Tyndall for hate, hate enough to arrange his murder, truly did not understand him.
I assure you, my lord, he did nothing to alert you to the potential of danger.
Which turned out not to be dangerous, Tyndall pointed out.
Nor did he look forward to your arrival as a good comrade should,
she continued, ignoring his jibes.
He all but cursed the news.
I don't doubt it, Tyndall said. I'm quite the asshole most of the time. It amazed Rundell to hear him say it, although he wasn't surprised at how perversely proud of the fact he seemed to be. Sir Rundell and I have always had a rivalry, he continued thoughtfully, but in fact he did send word to me by arcane methods about all of his concerns, he said, turning to her accusingly, after he managed to save my life. Curious behaviour for a backstabbing traitor, don't you think? We discussed them in detail.
If you think this man is your friend, Sir Tyndall, she said, her eyes dark and desperate, then you mistake yourself.
Friend? Tyndall asked, as if the word was strange in his mouth. We are fellow apprentices, comrades at arms. We grew up in the same village near enough, and were both knights magi, whatever that may come to mean. But I do not doubt he was not eager for my arrival, the same way I do not doubt for a moment that the idea of putting me in harm's way unnecessarily never crossed his mind. Ishi's tits, I'd do enough of that on my own. But most of all, you are mistaken, Maid Belsie, because Sir Rundell has no ambition to take my position.
Why would he? He is my commanding officer.
Belsie gasped, her head turning to stare at Rundell.
You are the commander?
I am, Rundell admitted, looking at her coolly. In charge of the entire mission, including the man you would have me put a dagger in. She looked from one of them to the other, her mouth open in shock and surprise.
My lords,
she said, but nothing else was forthcoming as she struggled to reassess her position.
I admit my mistake,
she said finally, her eyes tearful and downcast.
I abjure my falsehoods, and I appeal to your chivalry and your grace.
That last plea seemed to make Tyndall even angrier.
My chivalry? You invoke that honour after you sought to use that institution as a weapon to protect your stolen position?
How are you then entitled to its protection? Nay, chivalry flows from grace, and you have not earned that grace in my eyes. You are false, maiden, he said condemningly.
I am not, she insisted. I'm not. Please, if you bear me any love at all.
And now she speaks of love, Tyndall sneered harshly. Your love is as constant as the sands made, Belsie. First you made your eyes at brave Sir Rondell, he said scornfully. Your admiration for him was clear to all, until I arrived. Then his heart was a phantom to you. Thinking I was his commander, you flashed your skirts at me instead to further your ambitions. Love? What cause have we to love you, madam? You who have conspired against us.
I have not, I have not. I just wanted.
Will we not have the truth? Rondell growled.
I have told you the truth, she pleaded.
I don't think you have, Tyndall said conversationally, as he knelt in front of her. And a knight mage must always seek the truth. So let us ensure that the truth is indeed spoken this night, before anything permanent is decided. I would not have your pretty neck stretched for a lie, he said darkly. And how do you propose to do that? Rondell asked crossly. He felt miserable. He did like Belsie. He could understand her fear and her trepidations, but her aspirations to what did not belong to her disturbed him, and her willingness to use others so callously offended him. He remembered the few days they had enjoyed together before Tyndall had arrived, when he felt as her protector. She had seemed so vulnerable then. She seemed vulnerable now, but not in a delicate way. She was wretched, sobbing, as she struggled for some response that might save her. It disgusted Rondell that someone he had respected had fallen so far in his estimation. As much as part of him still wanted to spare her any further humiliation, he knew his duty.
Blue magic, Tyndall reminded him. Ilsar's truth-telling. I know it well.
A very potent version. Doesn't that risk leaving her an idiot? He asked. He wasn't certain. He'd heard of such misfirings of spells before. It happened with blue magic, from what he understood. I'm not certain we'd know the difference after this, he smirked. Let's cast this and see what the little maiden really thinks. The threat was delivered calmly, but as soon as Belsie heard it, her eyes opened even wider.
No. No, my lords. I have spoken the truth to you, I swear.
Then we shouldn't hear any surprises, then, should we? Asked Rondell, his nostrils flaring. Go ahead, Sir Tyndall. On my authority. He was angry, and he knew a commander shouldn't make decisions based on his emotions. He was trying to be fair. How could this be unfair? Let's hear the truth. Then we'll decide what shall be done with you. Tyndall closed his eyes and made a few movements with his hands, but then he seemed finished with his casting. There was no visible effect on the woman. If she utters a falsehood now, Tyndall assured him, that could well make her the most dangerous woman alive. But let's test it. What's your name? She barely hesitated.
Belsie of Maramore, daughter of Sir Hagbel, rightful heir of Maramore Manor.
Who was your mistress?
Lady Arcella of Maramore, she said,
her tear-stained cheeks flushing.
Who was your first kiss?
Tyndall continued.
Rorik of Regisway, she said,
staring at him angrily.
I was 12.
Sounds like it worked, nodded Tyndall. Your prisoner to interrogate, Commander? Rondell made himself comfortable in front of her.
Tell me about the night the goblins came for the folk of Maramore, he ordered her. We were inside, in Arcella's chamber,
she began after heaving a great sigh. We were trying to decide where to try to find some supplies, as ours were running low.
The other servants were waiting for orders, and they were not happy we came back. We were scared. We weren't supposed to be there, and I didn't want to go back in the first place. But Arcella insisted. She was always bossy, she said, almost fondly, but with a tinge of resentment. Then we heard the noise at the gate. We went to the window to look, and it sounded like a wolf pack was outside. But Arcella just laughed and bragged how strong the walls of Maramore were. Then something, a troll, ripped the gate off its hinges as we were headed downstairs. By the time we got to the door, they were already in the yard. The troll punched Gaithar so hard his head snapped back. The goblins were howling and laughing and stabbing at everyone. I saw Arcella freeze. She was fascinated. She wanted to watch, the stupid girl. I realized that the hiding place her father had prepared for her was open. I had been entrusted with its location and access by her father, as her loyal maid. I realized she wasn't going to move unless I prompted her, and when I saw Bukal fall to those bloodthirsty animals, I knew we were lost. So I ran. I ran to the stairs, and it wasn't until I made the landing that Arcella figured out what I was doing. She followed me, screaming. Stupid thing to do when the goblins were everywhere. I didn't scream. I ran. I got to the chamber and rolled myself into the space. It was cramped, only meant for one. It's even warded against magic. I closed it just as she came in. She was pounding on the outside with her little fists, she said, sobbing uncontrollably now. I could hear them, too. Just little girl fists making soft little bangs on the wood. She was screaming. She was screaming my name, begging me to let her in. It was awful. It was pitiful. But I didn't let her in. It would have meant both of us would be captured. I didn't think she deserved to survive, stupid girl. I was faster. I was older. I should have been the Lord's daughter, not her. I loved her, the foolish girl. But it was her or me, and I was faster.
So when did you decide you would become your cousin? Asked Tyndall, unsympathetically.
When I heard horses. When I saw they were soldiers and not goblins, I thought maybe I was saved. Then I thought, what else might happen if a bunch of soldiers happened on a servant girl? Then I thought that they wouldn't dare do that to Lady Arcella. So I became Lady Arcella.
And so you condemned poor Alwa because he threatened to expose your lie, Rondal said flatly.
Yes,
she agreed without prompting, much to her dismay.
I barely knew the man. I felt bad about it, very bad, but I did not know him well.
And he had nothing to do with the attack, repeated Rondal.
No, he was as scared as anyone,
she recalled sadly. That was enough to satisfy Rondal. He was about to dismiss her when Tyndall continued the interrogation in an unpleasant direction. So when you first saw Sir Rondal, what did you think of him?
He seemed kind of plain, she answered. Not too tall, not too strong. I thought I might be able to gain his sympathy, if I was pleasant enough to him.
Were you grateful for his presence?
After I was done being fearful, yes. I felt protected by him and his men.
And did you bear Sir Rondal any legitimate affection? Asked Tyndall with an impish glance at Rondal. Rondal glared back at him. He didn't think he wanted to know the answer to that.
A little, she admitted guiltily. He was nice enough, but he seemed a dull fellow. Not dashing like...
Like Sir Tyndall, finished Rondal, when it was clear the girl did not want to finish the sentence.
Aye, like Sir Tyndall,
she said, hanging her head. Rondal's face burned and he stared daggers at Tyndall, who didn't seem to be bothered. In fact, he continued his interrogation. So when you were affectionate with Sir Rondal, what was your motivation?
I had aspirations of keeping Maramore. He seemed like a decent man who might consider backing my claim.
He was persuadable, then, Tyndall continued. Rondal resisted the urge to blast him into pieces.
He was gullible,
she said, shocked at the words even as she spoke them.
Naive. He was willing to believe whatever I said, provided the same lips kissed him after.
Remember, Ron, she's only speaking the truth of her perceptions, Tyndall reminded uneasily. Not the absolute truth. That's not terribly comforting, Rondal shot back. His hands were clenched in fists. It should be. You told me your suspicions of her almost the moment you met her, he pointed out. Not so naive and gullible as Milady would suggest, apparently.
Tin,
stop this. Ron, indulge me, Tyndall said, turning to face his fellow apprentice. Please, there is purpose in this. Ron wanted to scream, but he knew better. Besides, when Tyndall had an idea in his head, you couldn't drive it out with a mace.
Continue,
he said, rolling his eyes.
Trust me,
he said, catching Rondal's eye. Mate Belsey, what were your ambitions once the outpost was established? At first it was escape, but when it seemed as if Maramore might be saved,
I contrived to take it as my own, she confessed. I saw Sir Rondell as a means to do that. If I had to trade my virtue for the manor, that was not too high a price to pay, she said, and blushed deeply. In the name of chivalry, I'll spare asking you whether it was intact and yours to give, Tyndall said with a chuckle. But you had no greater feelings for Rondell than that, a means to claim your property.
That is true,
she said, hanging her head. And then when I arrived, I thought you were the new commander. I didn't think anyone as aggressive and flamboyant as you would settle for being anything less than the commander. It was Rondell's turn to enjoy the truth-telling, and Tyndall's turn to blush. But he didn't blush much. You were certainly forward enough, he reminded her. When you came to my chambers, I thought it was my virtue under siege.
It was,
she agreed. When I saw you, I felt possessed of a fire. You excited my blood and made me dizzy. If I could have both Madamore and a handsome young knight to protect it, well, it seemed a gift from Ishii.
I suppose it would have, conceded Rondell. This is not the time to be sympathetic, Ron, snapped Tyndall.
Tin, in her position, would you have done any different?
Mayhap, he protested. I would not have imperiled an innocent man to steal a worthless estate.
You are not a woman,
Belsie said angrily, subject to the whims of men who have no consideration for your feelings or even your fate.
To be ordered around, bartered off, or discarded when you grow tired of them?
Were you women, gentlemen, you would have no trouble mustering the courage to use the weapons Ishii gifted you with to save your life.
Yet honour has no sex,
Tyndall spat. You were a victim here, madam, right up until you traded your honour for position. Now you have neither. Were I a woman, I would at least have clung to my honour. That can never be taken from you. You have to discard it yourself.
What use is honour if you are raped and killed?
She snarled. You were in no danger of that, reminded Rondell. I gave you my word.
You gave Lady Arcella your word,
she snarled. But deceitful Belsie you would have punished, used, and discarded.
No, he would not have, Tyndall said unexpectedly, for Sir Rondell never forgot his honour. Once he gave his word, he would have kept it, even if you broke yours. He's just like that. It's quite annoying. But whatever excuse you give us, it will never serve as more than a rationalisation of your dishonourable conduct. There was a time at which the good and proper choice was presented to you, and you did not take it. You relied on your affections instead.
You seemed happy enough with my affections when they were freely given,
she shouted at Tyndall, tearfully. They were genuine affections, Tyndall shrugged. Why would I spurn them?
Because your comrade had eyes for me,
she said accusingly.
You knew he fancied me, and yet you did not stop yourself.
No, my Belsie, I did not stop you. I stopped myself aplenty. Rondell was well aware of your disloyalty to his affections at that time. Being an honourable man, he ceded the field. He dismissed the matter, which both stung Rondell's pride and flattered his honour. Being told how much you deserve second place was harsh medicine. And being an honourable man, Tyndall continued, pacing in front of her, I would not snatch a prize I did not covet, merely to keep another from having it. It would take long acquaintance and ample proof of your worth before I would have felt affection for you sufficient to contend for your virtue with a comrade. As it appears, Maid Belsie, my caution was well-founded.
A noble title is not proof of a woman's worth,
she said defiantly. It was not your common status to which I was referring, Sir Tyndall said. You have revealed your character, and it is not worthy of my attention, for love or for sport. My fellow here does not have the experience with women that I do, through no fault of his own. But more, he does not understand how quickly their affections can be given if they see it to their profit. Not all women, he cautioned. There are plenty of ladies worthy the title by birth or nature, who would never dabble dishonestly with a gentleman's affections, finding other, more honest means to achieve their ends. But a certain type of woman, he said, shaking his head sadly, will turn her affection like a sail in the wind, tacking against fortune and circumstance on one strong breeze or another. Mayhap it is a phase, or a failing of youth, or a product of her fortunes, but we have the proof of her deceit by her own lips. That's admission of a crime, if one wanted to be technical, he said.
Please, my lords, she wailed,
reminded again of her plight.
I beg you not to try me for this.
You attempted to murder someone in order to steal an empty manor, Rundle said flatly. How do you expect to do that and not be held accountable?
I was only trying to survive,
she pleaded. You know, we could send her back to headquarters for trial, Tyndall pointed out casually. Let one of the line officers oversee her case. Eventually. They're a little busy back at headquarters, and they tend to take a simplistic approach to battlefield justice. The implication was enough to make Belsey moan in horror. Or we could just convene a tribunal right here to judge her ourselves, he said menacingly.
Oh, stop it, chided Rundle. You're scaring her.
She should be scared, Tyndall shot back. She tried to kill a man just as certain as if she had shot a bolt at him. She made a ham-handed attempt to manipulate the situation, countered Rundle. I don't think... Would you have allowed us to kill Alwa? He asked, suddenly curious. It was apparent from the struggle in her eyes that Belsey did not want to answer.
Yes,
she finally admitted, tears pouring down her cheeks.
As long as I did not have to watch it,
she added. Even worse, sneered Tyndall contemptuously. She's not even content to kill a man. She wants someone else to do it off stage. No dirty hands for her.
I just wanted the problem to go away,
she explained tearfully.
I didn't really want to hurt anyone.
And now you just want to pretend it didn't happen, accused Tyndall. But it did happen, and there are consequences to our actions, he added menacingly. As soldiers of the king, it is our duty. That's enough, repeated Rundle more loudly. Don't make this any more difficult than it already is.
Please don't hang me,
she begged.
I didn't mean...
You too, Rundle ordered. Enough. He issued a frustrated sigh and slumped his soldiers.
Lewin's stuff. What are we going to do?
He asked, looked to Tyndall for some hint of support. You're the commanding officer, Tyndall reminded him almost gratefully. I'm just the spare. This is your decision. I'm not holding this goat.
Damn him.
Rundle was hoping for some sort of guidance, but Tyndall, rightly, was insisting that he decide what was to be done about the murderous maid. At the same time, he was disgusted with his fellow for dumping the problem at his boots. He was also more satisfied that he had some control over the decaying situation. While that might imperil his honor, or his duty, or his soul, at least he had some influence. But just how did he wish to influence the situation? As angry as he was with Arcella, Belsey, he still did not feel her crimes warranted hanging. Traditionally, that was the only punishment meted out in such cases in a war zone. There was just not enough time or resources to give the accused the benefit of Lewin's blessing, and officers resorted instead to the swift and severe justice of Duin. He had hated to see such things come to pass in the field, in his limited experience, but he knew that they did. He had usually felt some sympathy for the accused, as a minor crime brought to justice was enough to see a man's neck stretched. Now the terrible decision was his to make. And this was no mere looting or banditry. This was a civilian conspiring to gain property through the expediency of attempted murder of an irregular in a war zone. Tyndall was right. That was too serious an issue to allow to pass without judgment. But as he watched the girl cower before them, weeping inconsolably about her self-wrought plight, the last thing Rundle wanted to do was prolong her misery. Despite her crime and her lies, he still felt a terrible pang at the thought of harm coming to her. He still thought about the first time he saw her, the terrified eyes and disheveled hair peeking out at him above a crossbow. She had been vulnerable and afraid, and all he'd wanted to do was protect her. She had taken that protection and sullied it. She had accepted his affections, and then spurned them when a better-seeming situation... No, he cursed himself, admitted, a better-seeming man had caught her attention. She had taken his desire to protect and cherish him and traded it. The feeling of that betrayal also surged through his mind. Yet there was a third voice that spoke to him, the calm, cool voice that had been growing since it had manifested at the Mysteries, the voice of his honor. Not the vainglorious urging to prove his position and demonstrate that he could coldly order a traitor executed at need, but the more compelling voice that spoke from his very soul.
His honour was the voice of his conscience, writ large, and it was less concerned with achievement and victory than it was doing what was right, what he could live with. It was the voice that had been born after Astasia's death, he realized, and it was telling him not to be hasty. There was nothing compelling him to act in the moment. While he felt Tyndall's anger and resentment for the girl, and shared it somewhat, that was also tempered with some understanding of her motivations. While that understanding did not excuse what she had done, it did make him sympathetic. And she was so pretty, which was all the more reason not to make a hasty decision. If he acted out of either affection and saved her, or petty revenge and condemned her, that would be unacceptable, his honour spoke to him. If he was given Lewin's judgment over her, then he would do as fair and impartial a job as possible, which meant, right then, to investigate further. Nothing will be decided tonight, he pronounced finally. Belsie gasped with relief, and her eyes swam with gratitude. It made Rundle highly uncomfortable. It is stupid to debate such things while goblins sniff for us. And once they are gone, our primary duty, he said, emphasizing the word, is to the mission.
Mission?
Belsie asked. We're going to wait out the pursuit, and then we're going to go on a little jaunt through the scenic Gilmoran countryside, to visit that manor they were so keen to keep you from seeing, and find out the source of that massive dump. You think now is a good time to go gathering intelligence? Tyndall asked, curiously. That's why we're here, he reminded his fellow, not to banter with deceitful servant girls. This is a distraction from what is important, and what is important is whatever they don't want us to see that badly. So tomorrow, should the way be clear, you, me, Alwer, and Belsie, here, are going to take some horses and head back up the road. Everyone else will return to Marimor and continue to fortify it until we return. In the meantime, he said, crossing the room to retrieve Belsie's arbalest, you will stay here, secure and alone, where you may reflect on what you have done. The fact that no actual harm was done will figure in your judgment, but so will your conduct from here on. Can I count on your good conduct?
Yes, yes, she agreed truthfully. I promise. I will serve you faithfully, my lords. I am so sorry, she wept.
You're a distraction, Rundle reminded both her and himself through clenched teeth. One I don't need, and one I cannot afford to indulge. Right now I am too close to this matter to give it a fair hearing, and in the light of more pressing matters I will defer it.
Ron, I'm not arguing with you, Tyndall said with a smirk, but isn't bringing along a weeping, treacherous woman on a spying mission a poor idea?
Alwer can handle himself. He's a fair fighter, no mistake. But
her?
He asked, thumbing in her direction.
Is that wise?
Possibly not, admitted Rundle, but I can't very well send her back to Marimor and let her honeyed tongue and dewy eye convince one of our men to let her go free. If she is with us, we can watch her. If she becomes a liability, he shrugged, well, we can handle that.
Let's find out,
Tyndall said, and turned to Belsie. So, madame, if you accompany us tomorrow, do we have to worry about a crossbow quarrel in our banks?
No,
she said. I might try to run away. I wouldn't attempt it, Tyndall continued conversationally. The new breed of fell hound the Gavani are employing might not be as fast, or have the endurance of a horse, but they can sniff out a scent like a hunting dog. And they have razor-sharp fangs, added Rundle.
I promise if I go with you, she said, after searching their eyes, I will serve you faithfully and not try to run away.
Hold on, Tyndall said, fingering his chin. Something occurs to me. Belsie, was there anything else you didn't want us to discover?
Yes,
she admitted against her will. And what was that? She swallowed.
The treasure of Marimor Manor. Sir Hagen and the family always kept some coin and such stashed away for emergencies. He took most of his wealth with him, but he left behind some.
How much? Rundle demanded.
70 or 80 ounces of gold, and nearly 400 of silver, plus some jewellery.
Oh-ho! Tyndall grinned. So you wanted to get away with a new name, a new title, a new estate, and literally steal the family jewels? If you are aware of a better claimant, Sir Knight, I would be happy to hear of them, she said contemptuously. That money belonged to my...
my father, my real father. If I am the only one of the blood left, we shall deal with that when we get back. If we get back, he added, rising. But Tyndall is correct. You must face accountability for what you have done. That cannot be avoided. And we shall use our journey into danger as a means of discovering your true character, now that you have given your parole. Good night, my lady, he added harshly, and left.